Will your church be one of the issues, etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, etc. 300. It has happened countless times in the history of education, higher education in America, where some of the most prestigious universities in the United States and colleges have a religious foundation. Now you wouldn't know it. Now you, well, you couldn't even trace that history unless you got out the history books. It would be impossible. Walk onto the campus, look at the student handbook, look at the courses offered, the requirements for being a tenured professor there, or even being a student there, and you'd never know that they were once Christian institutions. Now, that's the way of the world. That's how these institutions have seen fit to remain thriving and alive in an ever-changing culture. The question is raised for the media, when you talk about a Christian college, what does that mean anymore? When you talk about a Roman Catholic university, what does that actually mean anymore? Joining us to sort out that thorny question for the media, Terry Mattingly. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he writes a weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. He's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
You say that Baptist colleges, and you have some roots in the Baptist tradition,
yeah,
that they have found themselves in a classic catch-22. What is it?
Well, it's kind of interesting. We've got schools that have assumed for years that they were kind of surrounded by a certain culture where things could just be understood, and you didn't really need to state, you know, what you believed or where you were. And in among Baptists, this has been caught up in the fact that they're not supposed to have a creed, right? They're not supposed to have to list what the ties are that bind them, to quote the old hymn. It's just supposed to sort of be understood. Well, folks, we live in an age when the lawyers just won't live with that. I mean, you've got to come up, and if you're going to create a voluntary association in which you have certain beliefs you want your faculty to believe and teach, or certain moral codes that you want your faculty, staff, and students to have to follow, you're going to have to spell them out. And this is leading to some very interesting stories. You're talking about the Baptist issue. My column last week for Scripps Howard was on this. And then just yesterday I put a post up at Get Religion that kind of looks at this more from a broader range of denominational groups. And that was a very interesting religion news service piece that focused on the fact that there are some legal battles springing up because atheist groups are applying to become recognized religious groups on some religious campuses, seeking dollars that are, you know, that are student funds and fees paid that go toward, you know, toward campus groups, et cetera. And you've got all of these campuses kind of fighting a rear guard action. And the reason this is so intriguing to me for journalists is that we just have a tendency to refer to all these schools as religious schools, when that's just no longer enough information for the reader if you're going to try to understand what's happening.
How are you going to describe them? I mean, if you can't just say this is a Christian college or this is a Baptist college, as a journalist, what additional qualifiers need to be laid in there to make it an accurate description?
Well, at some point, the fact that schools don't know how to label themselves cuts into this. You know, yesterday at Get Religion, I said that sometimes it's the difference between a Catholic school and a school that, if you look carefully on their website, they've gone to the language, a school in the Catholic tradition. Or then you have Baptist schools, and you have Southern Baptist schools, and then you have schools that are moved or founded on the heritage of our Baptist freedoms and the Judeo-Christian tradition. In other words, you get people who are trying to describe what really can't be described, which is we're now kind of faith optional or moral behavior optional institutions. The one that made headlines that was down in Georgia, a school called Shorter University, is clearly trying to articulate that they have remaining Christian doctrinal standards, and they created some big headlines by actually approving a covenant which, this is going to shock you, which, for example, requires members of their faculty and staff to not be sexually active outside of marriage. I know that's a stunner, you know, or to actually believe that it's a sin to have sex outside of marriage. Well, this led to headlines, and the local newspaper in the backyard there at Shorter in Rome, Georgia, actually printed an editorial actively calling on people in the community to see if they could get the school unaccredited because of this. When in reality, these kinds of doctrinal and moral behavior covenants are common at hundreds of schools around the nation. They're just not common among Baptists, who are used to being able to say, well, you have the priesthood of the believer, everybody interprets the Bible for themselves, and we would never create a doctrinal code or a creed that we would force on anybody. So Baptists are caught in a catch-22 there. They're being accused of the sin of having a creed, but if they don't state explicitly what their college stands for, they're getting into legal trouble. The other one down there is another school called Mercer, didn't make headlines, and I think it's a comment on our age that a school made, you know, national headlines by saying you can't have sex outside of marriage. Another school explicitly said, we now will recognize health benefits for unmarried staff and faculty, whether they're in same-sex couples or, you know, different gender couples. And that didn't make headlines. So the largest Southern Baptist school in Georgia went that direction. It's an interesting era. It's an interesting era for journalists. It's also an interesting era for parents who are trying to decide where the heck to send their kids to school.
So how should we now define Christian college or university?
Well, we're at the point where labels just won't work anymore. Parents and journalists are going to have to get on the websites of these schools, and they're going to have to call up the student handbook, and they're going to have to call up the university's doctrinal statement, and you're going to have to find out what the actual language is on which this voluntary association has been created. Because see, when you're dealing with private schools, this is not like a state school. You're actually allowed to discriminate at a private school. I mean, a Catholic school is allowed to say that Catholicism is true, and we think our faculty should believe that. A non-denominational Protestant school, let's take Wheaton, for example, is allowed to say, we think all of our faculty should sign the Lausanne Doctrinal Statement on World Evangelization and not do it with their fingers crossed. You're allowed to do that in a private institution. At the same time, though, you have to tell students what they're signing up for. You have to be very explicit in saying, we're going to limit your freedom on the following issues. And a lot of schools at this point don't want to do that. Meanwhile, for journalists, it just simply means that they can't label these schools very simply and say Georgetown is a Catholic school to the exact same degree that Catholic University is a Catholic school, to the same degree that, I don't know, Chrysostom College is a Catholic school, or Franciscan University of Steubenville is a Catholic school. You're going to have to actually describe what these schools believe and stand for. You're going to have to use information, not labels.
So when someone reading about this says, Baylor, Baptist University.
Right.
What's the additional information that everybody needs to know, and where are they going to find it?
At this point, I honestly don't know, and I say that as a guy with 2 degrees from Baylor, and like half my family has green and gold corpuscles. I don't know at this point what's in Baylor's handbook on moral behavior. But I predict in this day and age, and with a pretty conservative administration currently in place, I'll bet it's in there somewhere. And that's my point, is that the consumer of this educational product and this consumer of this worldview that you're going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars for it to surround your child, we're going to have to go look that up. So for a school to be described in a newspaper, you no longer can say Baylor is a Baptist school. You're going to, depending on what the issue is in the story, I mean, I guess if it's football, you could just call it a historically Baptist school or something and leave it at that. But if it's an article about what the school teaches about science or what that school teaches about English literature or what it teaches about, you know, Christian history, you can't assume that Baptist school means the same thing when you're describing Baylor as Baptist school when you're describing Bob Jones University. Would you assume there's probably a difference between the two of them?
With only about 20 seconds, for those schools that are explicitly religious, like Bob Jones, does the term fundamentalist do the trick?
If they've claimed fundamentalist as their own, you use it. If not, you need to describe what the school believes. I mean, for most Catholic schools, Lutheran schools, most Baptist schools, non-denominational schools, fundamentalist would not apply in any extent at all. But you are going to have to find out what that school uses to describe itself.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
You bet.
When we come back, Dr. Frank Beckwith of Baylor University is going to join us. We're going to talk about liberal tolerance. He says it is a religious viewpoint, and it doesn't operate by its own rules, the rules that it imposes on everyone else. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Pastor Peter Bender about the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer, Give Us This Day Our Daily Bread. Thursday, we'll discuss John the Baptist with Dr. Jeff Gibbs of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Friday on Issues Etc., we'll have Pastor Bill Swirla teach us about the season of Advent that begins at the end of this week. And on Monday, we'll conclude our review of Joel Osteen's book, Every Day, A Friday, with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. That's the lineup for the next couple days here on Issues Etc., all the way through the weekend. When we come back, it is built upon a basic assumption that everything is relative, especially morality, and yet it is inconsistent, liberal tolerance. We'll take it apart piece by piece with Dr. Frank Beckwith right after this.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Hey, St. Louis listeners, our local affiliate, AM 1320 Bot Radio Network, lowers its signal power at 445 until the end of the year, but you can still listen to Issues Etc. full power at issuesetc.org. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org. Listen to what you want, when you want, Issues Etc.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is the Bible pro-life?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof recently asserted that the Bible's position on abortion is never mentioned. This simply isn't true. The fact that the term abortion isn't found in the Bible doesn't mean it doesn't have a position on abortion. In Psalms 22 and 139, the Bible clearly states that an unborn baby is a person with a soul. More directly, Exodus 21 indicates that whoever injures or kills an unborn child is to be punished. The Bible clearly views unborn children as persons and prohibits us from taking the life of innocent human beings, both born and unborn.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.